The AutJet Business Show is your gateway to expert business advice and real-world success stories. Each week, a different leader in the business world will share their tips, insights, and lessons, offering you practical advice to navigate your entrepreneurial journey. Whether you have a business idea or are just starting out or looking to elevate your existing business, the AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Ensure you get these transformative conversations live on Thursdays at 6 p.m. or find the podcast at highfm.com. Let's build your business empire together.
Welcome, welcome. Welcome to the AutJet Business Show. I'm David Zeidel, and tonight we've got Mark Elam with us. Good evening, Mark.
Hi, hi, David. Thank you. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Oh, it's great that you're here. And as we do each time before we interview you, I go into a short little business story or a little lesson that we have. And tonight's lesson is, or the quote, it actually two quotes, that comes from a guy called Wayne Gretzky. Now, a lot of people wouldn't know who he is. And even if you're a sports enthusiast in South Africa, you wouldn't know who he is. But in North America, you definitely know who he is. And he's a ice hockey champion. And he said, skate to where the puck is going, not where it's been. And what he's saying by that is, you need to anticipate what the future is and go to where the future is going to be, not where you're coming from. And the other quote he said, and I think this will lead to a lot of what Mark's going to be talking about tonight, is you miss 100% of the shots that you never take. So if you take a shot and you don't get it, you've missed. But if you don't take it, then you've definitely missed. So you're guaranteeing of missing it by not trying. And one other quote is from Paul Graham, who said, build something that 100 people love and not something that 1 million people kind of like. And it's about find what people really want and then build it for them. So those are the kind of lessons, yeah, and maybe you can feed into that. So Mark is with us today. And he's a man who's lived more than one lifetime's worth of business stories. And he's done it with grit. He's done it with generosity and a little bit of unpredictability. Mark made Aliyah not once but twice. And both times he returned to South Africa with a suitcase full of experiences and an empty wallet. So he had to start over again a couple of times. And then the one time when he came back, he launched, and I think it's called Maxim Car Hire. Was it called Maxim Car Hire?
Maxim Car Hire was in 2014, yeah.
And then another one where you, in the optics game, is it called?
Correct.
It's called?
IE Optics.
IE Optics. And it's his own optic business. And also he, in Israel, he helped out and when, you know that saying, when life throws you lemons, you make lemonade. He used fruit that was going off and helped people who didn't have food. And he'll go into that discussion with you, helping to feed a whole lot of communities. In 2023, he opened the Jewish Communities Restaurant in Johannesburg. And he believes that the key to business is giving people what they really want. And more important, not to be afraid to take a chance. And you're going to talk about the different chances that you've taken.
Correct.
For Mark, fear isn't something that holds you back. In fact, it's something that drives you forward. Now, I think just before the break, Kathy was asking me who's coming on, and I mentioned this a little bit to her. When I looked on your social media, onto Mark's social media feed, you know, you feed people, but there was nothing on the feed itself. It's the first time I've seen where it says, nothing to see for now. The only thing I could work out from that is that you got 6 kids. And as you said, you're not afraid to take risks. And this is what I want to talk about tonight. So Mark joins us tonight to talk about resilience, about risk, and the remarkable and different road that he's walked not once, but twice. So Mark, welcome.
Thanks so much, David. I mean, I don't even know if you've realized how much you've actually said in those few words. Just a couple of comments on that one saying that you said in terms of that hockey player, and this could be possibly the first tip, is that if I had to give one tip to anyone who's in business, not someone who's starting a business, someone who's in business, is pattern recognition. Notice if something is working, notice if it's not working. So many of us get caught up in a certain goal and we don't have the ability to say, hang on, this is not working for me. And that guy, when you mentioned that statement, he explains exactly that, the ability to look forward, look into the future, and recognize patterns. And that happens before they come, because once they're there, everybody's into it. So that was the first comment.
So just before you get further on, yeah. It's interesting because last week's show, I spoke about what Anthony Robbins said.
Yes.
And he says, recognize patterns, first of all, right. What you're just saying. He said, then use the patterns. And then the third thing he said is now create your own patterns.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah.
So it's building on, right. On exactly what you're saying.
Yeah. So, yeah, so that was just the first comment. The second comment I wanted to say was that, you know, we all have basically our own, this is a business show, but we all have our own definition of success, obviously. For some people, it might be becoming a rabbi. For some people, it might be having the perfect family because they didn't come from a family. And you'll notice that whatever people sort of want to achieve, they will actually start learning about it, hopefully. And they will become better at that, no matter what it is. So not everybody wants to go into business, and that's perfectly okay. But coming from a background where I came from, where was a certain amount of, let's say, poverty in a way, even if it was just in my own mind, to me, trying to achieve something in business was very, very important. I grew up thinking that everybody was wealthy except for me. That's how I grew up, and I've noticed that most people actually felt that, even wealthy people. And what drove me was to sort of try and find out, you know, how does one really drive oneself? I started my life as a mechanic from King David, which was very, very unpopular at the time. I mean, I was called a grease monkey. I remember walking into shul being embarrassed. I remember going to Doven with overalls on and dirty fingers, always hiding them. And I always said to myself that one day I'm going to try and better myself, at least financially. Not that that's what everyone should do, but I wanted to do that. And basically, I started studying it. How do you become successful? You sort of study success. Now, again, I'm not saying I'm very successful, but in my mind, I'm quite successful.
And I think that's the most important. And we live in a world today where even people who are not successful, they try to show that they're successful. So there's an image I'm thinking of that I saw of an apple that is half eaten. And to the outside world, it looks like this perfect apple. But from behind the apple, the angle you're looking at, it's half eaten. So it's only half an apple. And a lot of people try and use social media to portray themselves as completely successful when they themselves feel like they're not. And for me, it looks, the fact that I didn't see anything on Facebook or LinkedIn, to me it says, well, you're not trying to portray that. But it's interesting to hear that you feel that you're successful. And in fact, that's the most important person you need to try and impress is yourself.
Correct. So you're 100% correct. To me, my success, my real success came when I got married to my wife. I got 7 kids, so you were almost right with
7.
6.
I'm out of the loop.
I would have had more if I wasn't 55, but I've got 7 kids. And to me, that's my success. Now, because I feel myself as successful, not financially, I feel that I'm a success. I'm not afraid to try and test things, because even if I fail, my blueprint is one of success. I'm happily married, thank God, with 7 kids who in my mind are all angels, all gems, all the best kids. I say the second best kids in the world because I'm unbiased. And because I feel that I'm successful, my state of mind is one that is successful, I really don't mind failing. I mean, when I came to South Africa, for example, on that, you discussed it on the second time, I think that's now 11 years ago, we were known, I had 6 kids at the time, we were known as the family who walked their kids to school. Because I didn't even have a car. I stayed at my mother-in-law. She was kind enough to put me up in her 3-bedroom apartment. in Richmore Gardens. She lived in the main bedroom. I lived with my wife and me in another room, and then we had six kids in a third room. And even there, I was very, very happy. But what happened was that we were known as the family who walked the kids to school. And we used to walk the kids to school. And that's basically the background I was coming from at the age of 45. It wasn't like I was 20 and making a comeback. I was quite old already. I was 45 years of age.
So how do you go from, first of all, having that self-perception of yourself that your idea of yourself isn't linked to your business success? Whether you succeed or fail is irrelevant to how you feel about yourself. How did you build that resilience?
So I'll tell you what actually happened to me. I don't want to speak too much about it, but I was in the very, very, and I say fortunate position that at the age of 35, I had what people suspected was a transient ischemic attack. It's called a TIA, which is actually a stroke or mini stroke that doesn't leave any long-term effects. And coming from that state of mind where people said, I thought, right, I've had a stroke, my kids are all young, I'm not going to make it, because I really thought I'm about to pass on. And that blueprint of I'm lucky that I'm alive. You know, I remember thinking to myself, my kid was 4 or 5, Avishai, and I said, I wish I could make another 3 or 4 Shabbos, because these symptoms that I was having kept on recurring. It was a numbness on one side of my face, a numbness on my legs. What it turned out to be was anxiety and panic attacks. But in my mind, my days were limited. And having that blueprint, almost nothing, I don't want to say this out of arrogance, but almost nothing scares me. I'm not afraid to do most things, and that's because I'm just happy to be alive, so to speak.
So every day you look at as if it's a gift for you.
I wouldn't say every day, but when I'm faced with a challenge, I remind myself of where I was 15 years ago. So not every day, but often, yes, very often.
And then take us back. I'm going to unpack a little bit of this, but just take us back to the sequence of events of your whole life, from being a mechanic, as you said,
right,
through to going to Israel, losing your money, or coming back with nothing in your wallet. How did you start again? And you did that twice.
So what happened was I opened a car rental business when I came back to South Africa for the first time. All I had was a blue Mazda. I remember it. It was my brother and myself. And what we did was we had no money. We were staying in Berea, in 101, can't remember the exact address, in Berea. And we literally had no money for food, which will bring me later to the soup kitchen. And what we did was I said, you know what, to my brother, I said, let's rent out this car. I had a friend, his name was David. He was immigrating to America. I said, let's rent him this car and he'll give us 50 rand a day and we can sort of buy food with this money. And we started a business called Maximum Car Hire. In those days, you could get finance. My gran had 6 cars. I had 6 cars. My grandfather had a few cars. It was easy to get finance, unlike today, which is more challenging. And we basically built that from 1 car to 118 cars, by which time I decided, I got married, that I want to go and live in Israel.
Yeah. Great. So I want to unpack that, because a lot of people who are successful in business say, well, we went from 1 car to 100 cars as if it's nothing. That's massive. I want to unpack that, but we need to go to an ad break first, and we'll do that when we get back.
Okay.
The AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Welcome back. You're listening to the AutJet Business Show. I'm David Zeidel, and we're talking to Mark Elam. And Mark, just before we continue with the story, I just want to give a story of AutJet, that they're having a fundraiser, and it's a paddle day. And what they're looking at is to get people who want to play paddle. And you can get hold of Helene. That's spelled H-E-L-E-N-E. So it's each letter's got an E afterwards, H-E-L-E-N-E, at autsa.org.za, and just send her a message if you're interested. I'm not sure. I think they're looking at it's about 2,500 rand per player or 5,000 rand per team. But if you're interested, and this goes to a great cause of help of where they help a lot of businesses develop, and they'll use the money for that, because all the proceeds go to the Ought Jet division of Ought SA. So if you're interested, just drop Helene an email and she'll give all that information. Mark, just getting back to your story. So you said you came back, you had nothing but a car,
right?
And you decided to rent the car out. And then you said, and then we had 100 cars. How do you go from one car to 100 cars? Just take us through, if you can remember, what was the process and your feeling with that and et cetera? Like,
so funny, it's funny you mentioned that, because I haven't thought of it for a long time, but I actually use that motto till today in my new companies. And the motto is very, very simple. If one is good, two is better. Otherwise, the first one wasn't so good. And I use that all the time because I sell optical frames, and people say to me, what's the minimum amount that we have to buy if you want to get into this range? And I say the minimum amount, unfortunately, is one. And they laugh at me. I say, because if I'm giving you one that's a good deal, two is going to be a better deal. Otherwise, the first one is not such a great deal. And that's how I went from one to 118 cars. And I tell you something I learned in those years is that it's not a question of resources that you have. It's really not. It's easy to say after the fact. It's a question of resourcefulness. How resourceful are you? Like I'm saying to you, I was able to get finance in my name. I was able to get finance in my brother's name, in my aunt's name. We had friends that we said, look, can we get finance in your names? And to this day, if you're creative enough, if you are creative enough, you will find a way to do it if you're an entrepreneur. Not everyone is and not everyone should be. But if you are, I mean, you listen to all the stories, you read the people's life stories, they all had these financial challenges, all of them. And yet somehow they were able to overcome them.
So you start with one car, and then you develop, and eventually through resourcefulness, you get the resources,
right,
and you manage to develop it. But there are two sides to business. The one side is having the product. The other one is getting the customer. How did you get the customer for the product?
Okay, so just before even that, I want to just say that most people that I've spoken to or that I help, they have this notion that success and failure is this one big decision. That day I came back to Israel or I came back to South Africa, that's the day I was successful. And that day I went out and met this person, that's the day my business collapsed. The reality is that it's not one big decision. It's consistently and continuously trying to make the right decisions, not every time you will. And when you make that wrong decision, to as quickly as possible, again, that sensual acuity, that ability to see if it's working or not, change it and change it rapidly. And that's basically how we were able to build. It wasn't only me, we had other people who were helping us. We went to the gray market for a while. We offered people deals and shares, like I'd give you a 20% share in this particular car. You can be creative. There's no question about it.
So you managed to get people, and were they hiring? They weren't hiring a car on a daily basis. They were hiring for an extended period.
So my motto, what we used to tell people was, I don't know if it was true or not, we used to say, nothing under a month. You know, everyone needs an edge. And I used to tell people, and they loved this, I used to say, we bridge the gap between fleet management at car hire without the contract. So we are giving you fleet management without the contract. And the first customer I had, he said, I'm not sure if I need the car for a day or a week. And he landed up taking it for 9 months. And I said, here's a business. Just that, and again, that's not the reason I was successful, but that's when I realized that long-term car hire is the way to go.
Wow.
And we were cheaper than anyone else. I'm going 25 years ago, we had a waiting list, and people used to phone me up and say, do you have a car to rent? I said, fully booked. I'll put you on my waiting list. And they used to say, well, what do I do in the meantime? I say, go to Avis, go to Eurocar, go to Crest Car Hire, and the second one comes in, I'll give you a call. And we literally had 20, 30 people on a waiting list because we were the cheapest. We offered 4,000 kilometers. No one did it. And if everyone did 4,000 kilometers, we would lose money. But that ability to look at something holistically, to say, hang on, out of these 50 or 60 cars, only 3 or 4 of these people are doing 4,000. Let's just offer it. No one's going to do it. And that's where the risk taking, it's management of risk. It's not that I'm a big risk taker. I try and manage risk in the best way possible.
Wow, that's amazing. So you started with that car hire business. That gave you some finances. And then did you go back to Israel after that?
Yes. So then I went back to Israel. I sold my shares. I was in Israel for about a week, and my mother said to me, who was living there, she said, you can't lounge around in my house, you better get a job. So I looked in the paper, and they were looking for a driver at an organization called Table to Table, and I got a job there as a driver for a couple of months. And then one day there was a guy, his name was Isaac Newrock, he had a flood, and all his pomelos were destroyed, and the CEO of the company said, well, go see if we can get it for the needy. This was a non-profit organization, and I went to him and I connected with him. This guy was a very, very wealthy person. He said, Mark, right, you're now in charge of the Leket program. I did that for a good 8 or 9 years, and it really did well. It basically won, not me personally, but the company, which was my actual project, won the Presidential Award in Israel in 2008, literally competing with 28,000 nonprofits. And it didn't win it because of me. It won it because of the guy who was in charge of me. He was really a very successful businessman, astute. And I learned a lot of stuff from him and a lot of stuff from the people that I used to, because we used to go pick oranges and we used to pick fruit. For many reasons, farmers choose not to pick their fruit. I can explain it, but the bottom line is they don't pick their fruit after a certain time. And I was very fortunate to mix and mingle with some of the richest people. In fact, Donald Trump was supposed to come once. He never came, but he sent his son. The president came. Anyone who's anybody used to come to this particular project, especially if they were from overseas. And I had the chance of standing with them and picking oranges for you. And I really gleaned a lot of successful information, because these were all donors. So in America, there are people who have these foundations, and they are so massive. They give million-dollar donations. They don't just give it. They send people to scout out the nonprofits, and they try and see who should we donate to. And we used to say to them, no, don't donate. Come see what we do. Come pick oranges. And you can imagine, as a Zionist, picking oranges in the state of Israel, and then it's going to go to nonprofit. And I used to spend time with them, and I learned a lot from them.
So you learned a lot from them, and you did a lot of good work for the company. What's it you said?
Table to Table.
Table to Table.
Yeah.
But you didn't make money from that.
No,
yourself.
I did. I was actually paid. I made money from that. I was paid. I had a good salary. I was a paid employee. It's actually one of the tips about nonprofits is that, we all view nonprofits as something not to pay people. We, in fact, if you hire the best like any other business, you will do better. And this is what this guy, Joe Gittler, did. He hired the best in each industry. He would headhunt people from high-tech companies and put them in his firm, etc. And he really, today it's one of the leading nonprofits in Israel, without a doubt.
And so you're doing well. You're getting presidential awards. Why come back?
Well, I never got the presidential award, actually.
But the company got it.
Why come back? Because at the end of the day, you know what? When you're an entrepreneur, having a job is a jail sentence, no matter how good it is. I got bored of being in the papers. I was once on the 8 o'clock news even.
And now you're on hyphen.
Yeah. But when you're an entrepreneur, if you're an entrepreneur by nature and you can't develop that ability, it's like a jail sentence. And again, we all have our own definition of success. So there, that wasn't my definition of success, really. To be this great guy and to be in the nonprofit world and get all that wasn't my definition. My definition to me was to have the freedom to decide, what do I do today? I want to get to go to work, not have to go to work. And that's what drove me to be an entrepreneur.
And so you came back to South Africa, and just fill us in with what you did work-wise, but also you opened up a restaurant for those that couldn't afford food.
So what happened in Israel was that I went with a bit of money. I was working at this Table to Table, but slowly but surely I was watching my net asset value deteriorate. Even though it was considered a good salary in Israeli terms, slowly but surely I was watching my net asset value deteriorate. And at some point I had to make this decision to come back to South Africa. I came back to South Africa, opened up this optical company, which I'm doing till today. And about 3 years, 2.5 years, 2 years ago actually, I was speaking to Rabbi Eckhaus. And he said to me that, it's amazing. He's getting all these calls. And it's not about people who can't afford medical aid and they can't afford school fees. They literally can't afford food. I said, Rabbi, it's one of the easiest things to manage a soup kitchen. And we call it the Jewish Community Restaurant. I said, it's very, very simple. I've got a lot of experience. In Israel, we were an umbrella organization we actually helped thousands of nonprofits. We didn't distribute food directly to the needy. One of the jobs I had was to decide, do we give you assistance or don't we? So I learned how to analyze nonprofits. And I said to him, it's really simple. You know, if you follow these simple rules, it'll work. And then, of course, we spoke to one or two donors. There was one guy, he came to me, he said, it'll never work in South Africa. I remember it clearly. I said, I'm not so sure. I said, if we give it the right approach and we get people who are paying and people who are not paying, you'll be surprised how it may work. And he said to me, if you get 50 people, I will subsidize that entire soup kitchen. And about 4 months later, I won't mention his name, I said, can you please come? We've got 50 people here. And he didn't subsidize it, but he does give it. He's our biggest donor.
And that was in 2023 that you opened the restaurant?
I think it was August 2023.
And is it still operating today?
And still operating today. We're getting over 100 people a day, between 75 and 100.
And people who come to eat can either pay if they can, or if they can't, then it's a free
meal?
That's
correct. I would say that 95% of the people don't pay. And if they do, they start off paying, but quite very early, very soon into the, call it the experience, they realize that it's they don't feel embarrassed, they don't feel ashamed. And there are people there who, you actually wouldn't know, we've got this like paying area where you go in there and it says, if you're paying. It's like elections in Israel where I got the idea from. You don't know who you're voting for. You don't know who's paying or not. And we've even done away with that because people are not embarrassed and it's very comfortable. And another thing we provide at this particular restaurant is a social interaction. What we don't realize with people who are underprivileged, call it, is they're very lonely. They're really isolated. You don't realize how much money you may spend on entertainment, on going out. Just going to the shops and back doesn't cross their mind because they just don't have the money. And if they do, it's for the first 2 weeks of the month. And they come there and they're socially interactive. And it's almost like I sit there sometimes with a guy and I just love listening to the conversations because they're amazing. Mm-hmm. They are really, really amazing. And we've got all types of people there. There's one guy there, he won the lottery 20 years ago, a couple of million. And another person there who once had like 100 workers. You know, one thing I've learned about life is that you just don't know where you can land up. It's not like, oh, well, that, you know, if you take Hatzola, if you take so many organizations, the CSO, you think, well, I need this for myself. I want to give a donation. I need this for myself. When it comes to a soup kitchen, you never quite think you'll ever really need it. We all might need an ambulance, God forbid. If not me, my mother, my uncle, my aunt. But no one's going to need food. And we sort of, I wouldn't say we ostracize them, but I've learned so much from that soup kitchen. And often I just sit there and I'm just like, where should I sit today? What movie do I want to watch? Because it's just so interesting listening to these people and they love talking about their life. And it's, in the beginning, I thought they were, let's say, exaggerating. But I've come to learn that they're actually not. It's actually real. They're talking about real things and they're real people and real experiences. And I'll be honest, I'm most comfortable there than anywhere else because it's real people.
So if you've just tuned in and you're wondering who we're talking to, we're talking to Mark Elam, who the only thing I can call is an entrepreneur of both for business and for social causes like you're talking about. Could Mark, maybe you don't know the answer to this question, but having listened to all these people, is there a pattern, as you mentioned, or a theme that comes through of how did people land up in a situation where they need to go to the soup kitchen rather than being able to afford it themselves?
There is a theme, David, there is a theme that I've noticed, and it's what we discussed right in the beginning. First of all, it's the theme of being dishonest with yourself. Not knowing that things are changing, not realizing that things are changing, and being scared of change. I have a friend that, true story, 2017, he made 16 million rand. 16 million rand. COVID came, his rent was 250,000 a month. He basically went and sold, his cars were a couple of million. And after COVID, which has been 5 years, he didn't realize that something had, I'm not going to mention his business because people might know him, something had changed in the economy. And he was always talking, no different to a gambler, about the next deal. And if he does this, he'll get out of it. And I'm saying to him, it's not working. Look, and it's not working. And he's going more and more into debt and his car goes back. And today he's on the Chevra Kadisha list. He lost every single cent. While he had it, he spent it. And a lot of it went to charity. And now he simply doesn't have, and he's still in this business, thinking, well, if I went to Zambia or I went here, it'll work. And if I went here, it'll work. Whereas the reality is, it's not working anymore. And that's a theme that I've seen in the Jewish community restaurant, that things like this guy who had this leather factory, he had 100 workers. China started coming. And he, you know, if he would have cut his losses there, he could have retired.
Mm.
But he's, you know, it's carried on. And I guess when you invest so much of yourself in something, it's very hard to be objective. It's hard to remove yourself and have this sensual acuity and say, is it working? Isn't it working?
So here's the question I ask a lot of entrepreneurs, and there's no absolute answer, but maybe let's get your answer on it. There's the one thing of saying, well, you gave up too soon. You almost, it gets harder just before you break through, and you gave up just before you were going to break through. That's the one side of it, where don't give up, keep pushing, you're about to make it. And the other side is what you've just said, where people do that and they keep going and going and don't know when to give up.
That is such a good question, because it's really something I read about the other day, and it was about this guy whose his job is to hire CEOs for companies. You wouldn't believe there is such a job like that. In other words, if you're a big company, you go to him and he decides what your needs are. And he says he has this, what's it? He's got this thing called HAIR. In other words, these are the four, each letter stands for something. These are the four attributes he looks for. And I'm going to touch on what you mentioned now. The first one, the H for HAIR, stands for helicopter. So he wants to see if this particular CEO has the ability to rise above, look at the whole picture from above, and then land the helicopter and look at the details. The A stands for an analysis. Is he able to analyze things, the market, the situation, patterns? If he's able to analyze it, it's very good. The I in here stands for imagination. How imaginative is he? How creative is he? And he goes on to say, and this is what I want to touch on your point, the R stands for reality. You can be brilliant in every single one of those three attributes. If you're not a realistic person, if you're not grounded, if you believe that faxes are going to come back into business, or if you believe that no matter how hard you try, you're going to go to the vegan fair to promote your beef burger, if you're not realistic, none of those attributes will help. So the thing is to be realistic. So, and that, I guess, is subjective, because what is realism?
So the acronym you used is HAIR.
Yeah.
And what you've said is actually hair raising, because it's like from an MBA, they teach different things and they use different words. This is the most succinct I've seen it. When they talk about rising above, it's talking, they maybe use terms of you've got to zoom in and zoom out.
Right.
So you've got to see the big picture, but you still got to look at the little detail.
Right.
So I want to unpack a little bit more of this, but again, we'll do that after the break.
The AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Welcome back. You're listening to the AutJet Business Show. I'm David Zeidel, and I'm listening, and we're listening with enthusiasm to Mark Elam, who's an entrepreneur of note, and he ended off with something I said was hair-raising, and it's talking about the HAIR acronym of the helicopter view, rising above, and then zooming in and zooming out, then analyzing, look at the patterns that are involved, then imagination of being creative,
correct,
but still being realistic. And each one of those is a skill, and each one you can think, well, is it going to work or not? And you can get each one wrong, but at least if you're looking at all sorts of things, and maybe ask yourself the question, are you like that? I want to unpack a little bit more, and you spoke about, just during the break now, during the ad break, you were talking about some success formula from Anthony Robbins, but just before you get there, I want to unpack your own story just a little bit more, and then we'll get to Anthony Robbins' thing. Because you briefly said, well, you got into the optics game. Just how did you get into that? And what exactly is it? And I know you were saying, well, you sell one. And it made me think, well, most people, they'll have minimum orders
right.
of when you want. So just take us through, how did you get there and how do you operate that's different to other companies in the optics? And it's the glass frames business, I presume.
Correct. It's the optical frames business. So all company, you know, at the end of the day, if you're going to go into business, you need an edge. No matter what you're doing, whether it's a non-profit, whether it's business, whether it's looking for your wife, you need an edge over everybody else. And the edge normally comes, there are many ways the edge can come. What I did was, number one, I have no minimum orders, for example. There's no minimum order. You can buy one, you can buy 20, you can buy 30. Another thing we do is called one-for-one swaps. So if you want to go and you sell to an optometrist 12 Ray-Bans and you're now not happy with those Ray-Bans, you can send them back, but you have to buy 24, two-for-one. So we do one-for-one swaps. And they're all these type of little, call it the compound effect, little, because you don't know what speaks to the optometrist. It's very difficult to know exactly. He might be looking for, the important thing is to give them what they want. Some want payment terms, some want price. There's no point me coming to you and saying, you know what, you can pay me over 6 months when the guy's got thousands in the bank and he wants to pay COD and get a better deal. So you've got to know, you've got to sort of try and work out what does this particular person want. And this comes, by the way, through negotiation. And there are so many courses on this. And it is so easy to be a better negotiator that it's actually, they should teach this at school, in my opinion. They should actually teach you how to negotiate at school. And basically, these small little compound deals and things that you see in the optometrist will make him want to buy from you as compared to someone else. The thing is to analyze him, and you've got to do it quickly. You've got 5-10 minutes, he's busy. And then of course it's relationships, people buy from people they like, it's a known fact. And of course, I mean, a company needs quite a few things. Number one is speed. I always, and this is purely PR, we do packing at night from about 8 to 10. Even though I don't need to, but I say I'm the only company that has a night shift logistical program. Sounds lovely. It's one lady who packs a couple of, but the optum thinks, wow, a night shift. I said, yeah, you'll get you off your frame tomorrow. So you need speed. You need to know how to offer them terms. You need to have service, of course. Service is built over time. And the better you are at these sort of things, I mean, take a look at Checker 60. It was so successful that Pick and Pay's got a problem. Even though they copied them, they're a bit too late. They're closing stores. And what did they do? They said, you'll get your groceries within 60 minutes. Simple idea, and it's speed. So you need speed, you need service, you need pricing, you need everything.
So what I'm hearing you say with all of this of no minimum orders, the one-for-one swap, the speed, the terms, is really what you're saying with all of that is making it easy for someone to do business with you.
You've summed it up. You've actually summed it up perfectly, and I'm going to use that myself when I see other people. Taking away all the obstacles and making it very comfortable for them to do business with you.
That's fantastic. And so when did you start the business?
We started it 10, 11 years ago when I came back to South Africa.
And so you came back to South Africa. You still had a bit of money.
Not much.
So how then do you start a... You know, a lot of people talk to me, I want to start a business, but I need to get millions in capital before I can start the business. You come back, you're actually going down the slide rather than up the slide, and you still open up a business and you make it successful. So how did that work? Was your mind frame... Excuse the pun. But was your mind frame exactly where it is today? Where it didn't matter if the business failed, you still had confidence in yourself? And just take us through somebody else who has a great idea, hasn't got much capital. What would they do that you did? Or what should they do?
So that is a challenging question because, I mean, at the end of the day, you need a bit of muzzle as well. You need a bit of muzzle. But I tell you what I did. And this is very important, the ability to negotiate. If you're able to negotiate, you can get money, you can get terms from your suppliers. I mean, I had a thing with actually someone in Israel and a massive company, the biggest optical company in Israel. They were going to go into the NASDAQ. And at some point, true story, they called me in. I used to go to Israel and come back. And I come in and there's four people in the room. And like, what's wrong? They said, this is the CEO. He wants, the owner, not the CEO. He wants to know how you got $200,000 credit from us. We don't even know who you are. That's what they said to me. And I said, but you gave me this, you gave me this, you gave me that. And they made me sign a document the Badge signed a document that nothing is valid unless all four signatures are on this piece of paper. And that's the ability to negotiate. There are certain things you can do that you can negotiate. People will learn to like you. They will want to give you things. They will want to help you. And of course, you need a good name. You need to be honest. Because at the end of the day, you know, a friend of mine told me the other day, a good name travels far. A bad name travels far further. So if you've got a good name, you can get to it. And people want to do business with you. So this is their business. They are supplying frames. So you, even now, I just got a new brand now. And they don't know me. And I just got, like, instead of paying them COD, I got them to give me 90 days, to pay them over 90 days. And I showed them why it pays them to give it to me.
So you convince them that it's good for them and good for you, and gives you the ability to do that.
Right, the ability to negotiate. I always say you don't get what you deserve. You get what you negotiate.
Mm, excellent. So let's go to... We're going to go to the Anthony Robbins story, right. What you call the success formula.
The ultimate success formula, because it'll bring you down to reality, like we discussed. This does it by default.
So before we get there, though, guess what?
Yeah.
We got to pay the bills, so after the
break. Okay, sure.
The AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Welcome back. You're listening to the AutJet Business Show. I'm David Zeidel, and we're listening to Mark Elam, who's talking us through his business stories, but also how he used other people's things for success. So, Mark, just before the break, you said we were going to talk about, and I think you called it the ultimate success formula. Right. And it's not something you created. It's from Anthony Robbins.
Tony Robbins.
Okay.
And why I mentioned that is because it's applicable to what we discussed earlier about being realistic, being practical. And he says it's a four-stage process. Number one, you've got to know the outcome, which is obvious. And by the way, it doesn't have to be applicable to business. You could say, I want to lose 30 kilos. You could say, I want to marry the woman of my dreams. You could say, I want to own a boat. So know the outcome. Simple. Number two, take action. Any action you want, it doesn't matter how small, take action. Number three, something we already discussed, which is sensual acuity. Is this getting you closer to your goal or not? If it's getting you closer, carry on. You'll sooner or later get there. And number four, which is the reality part, if it's not getting you closer, change what you do. And how often will you change what you do? Until you reach your goal. So if you're continuously changing what you do, by definition, sooner or later, you're going to say it's not working or it is working. The question is, when is that cutoff? Who knows? The example they use is, how long would you give your average baby to walk? No wonder everyone walks. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, and the thing, it's nice that you use that analogy with a baby, because I said, if we didn't encourage babies, well, you know, a baby will stand up and they wobble a bit and then they fall down. And rather than saying to them, you're not the walking kind.
Right.
We clap and we cheer them on,
because
if we didn't, if we said, you're not the walking kind, we'd have adults crawling around the streets, because no one would want to fight through that. So it's about having that knowledge that, yes, you will get there. And you're saying, like a baby or like a person learns to walk eventually, you've got to give yourself the chance. But you might walk differently to how you thought you were going to walk. And that's what you're saying about being realistic.
Being realistic, yeah. You know, we have a thing today called, and we all suffer from it, including myself. It's called learned helplessness, where we've taught ourselves to be helpless. And it comes from three things. Number one, we believe the problem we're having, and every single one of us has problems, we believe it's permanent. If you think back to the problems you've had over the last few years, it's not permanent. Most problems, vast majority, are not permanent. Number two, it becomes evasive. Because I've had a fight with my brother, I can't go to business. Because my business is collapsing, I'm not prepared to go to gym. So it's evasive. It starts attacking every part of our life. And the last thing, which is the most important, you blame yourself for it. You believe it's your fault. And that's how we function today. People don't take risks. People don't try because they feel that they're just simply too scared to do it. And fear has to be a motivator. What happens is it jails us. Me and a friend of mine, we used to have a thing called the Courage Group. And we literally did exercises. I mean, one thing I've learned is don't tell your mother-in-law what exercises you did. And one of the things we used to give each other was, I had to go to the dog parlor and asked him for a haircut. Now, it may sound crazy. So I went to the dog pile. I said, I need a haircut. And I had to sit there for a minute and convince them to cut my hair. And they said, no, we don't do haircuts. And I said, yeah, but I'll take responsibility. And he had to go to Santon and go to Hush Puppies and say, you're killing puppies. But what we were training ourselves to do, it worked. We had a club. We had about 80 people in this group. Everyone did exercises. It was amazing.
What did you call it? A courage exercise?
It was called the courage group. And we got guests on it. We're talking about 12 years ago. And one guy even wrote a novel because the ability to conquer the fear. And we had all these experts in this, and we had them talking. And what happened was that, I even demonstrated to my kids. I said, I'm going to go in here and I'm going to ask them for a cake. It's a hardware store. And I can do it like nothing. And they laugh at me. They don't know where to put themselves. And that's it. We have this fear of failure. And we've got to conquer that fear, because you learn nothing from success. The only thing you learn from is failure. And that is so clear to me. And ask anybody who's achieved something, they will tell you the ability to learn comes from success. Because anyone who succeeds off the cuff, he's just giving you his winning lottery numbers. It's just luck. You learn from failure, not to repeat mistakes.
And somebody, you talk about the lottery, and that's just luck. Being able to do it, the question is, can you learn from what you've done and do it again? And if you can't, then it means it was luck. If you learn
Correct.
From it, then you've gained some kind of skill. And the lottery is, some people say you can learn from doing it. But So I love this concept of the courage group.
It was a group. And I mean, to this day, there are people who I'm friendly with from it.
Was it something that you started, or you just joined?
A friend of mine, I used to come from Israel here, and my friend started it, and we joined and we spoke about it, we studied it, we did visualization techniques. For example, we learned the fear of failure. We would do things that we knew wouldn't work. That was the whole purpose. Mm. My son once came to me and I said, Avishai, you've got to learn to fail. You've got to learn to fail. So I said, the one guy wanted him to open a Takealot account. I said, tell the guy 25,000 rand and try and get him to pay you. You're not going to succeed. And we learned to link. I've taught all my kids this. Link not pain, but pleasure to failure. Failure is your friend. It'll teach you about yourself. Obviously, you've got to be realistic. Don't be a mashugana. But by definition, you'll be realistic. No one's going to say, take your life savings and put it on red and I'm a courageous person. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about practical, real solutions. And most people, out of the fear of failure, will do absolutely nothing. And the last thing I always say, that I didn't invent this, but ships are safe in the harbor.
Yeah.
But that's not what they were created for. And we've got to be out there. We've got to be taking risks. We've got to be learning. And at the end of the day, we've got to realize that at the end of the day, Hashem is in charge, and he's your partner, the real partner, and he'll guard you, and he won't give you something you can't handle. But most of the fears we have are self-imposed.
So I want to give you a challenge. I want to start this courage group again, and I want to do it with you.
All right.
And I want to ask the people listening on the show, you can contact Chai FM and send us a message if you want to be part of that. And we'll start it again. I think I've never heard of this
really?
Before.
Okay.
I think it is incredible.
Yeah.
And I think that would make a difference in people's lives. And I've had the concept of, it's like you,
really?
of trying to fail at one stage.
Yeah.
And I had to stop because I was failing too much.
Right.
It was like it became everywhere. Yeah. But that's fantastic. Yeah. And I want to try that again.
Okay, great.
So, Mark, we've just got the message from Craig, who kind of says, it's time to wrap up. And
Thanks, Craig.
I can't believe it. But I just want to go through some of the things that you mentioned. You said, first of all, pattern recognition. It's important to see what is happening so you can look down the line. Don't link you to your business success. In other words, even if, and it's what we're talking about now, even if you're failing, it doesn't make you a failure. So don't link those two things together. And for you, it was the fact that you felt you were lucky to be alive. So every day is a bonus, really.
Correct. That's the key. That's, for me, that's amazing.
And then the hair-raising stuff was the helicopter view, looking up, zooming down, being able to do both. Analyze, look at the patterns and analyze where is it going so that you can be ahead of it. Then be creative through your imagination, but always, always be realistic. in what you're doing. I think there's a lot more than what I can say, but you said, first of all, know what the outcome is, know what the goal is. Then once you know what that is, take action. Look every day, are you getting closer to that? And finally, see where you're at and then make those little changes. Correct. So that you get closer and closer.
Correct.
So Mark, wow, this has been amazing. Thank you for joining us today. I'm David Zeidel. This is Mark Elam, and this has been the Orchard Business Show.
Thank you.